Thursday, December 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the late President George H.W. Bush is remembered at a funeral service in Houston, Texas. China is angered over the arrest of the Huawei heir and executive in Canada. And we hear how algae is used to make clear water and power. It's all ahead. The family of George Herbert Walker Bush said their final goodbyes to the nation's 41st president at a funeral service Thursday in his adopted hometown of Houston, Texas. The service took place at St. Martin's Episcopal Church, where Bush's flag-draped casket was in repose overnight so the public could file past it. Bush's closest friend and former Secretary of State James Baker spoke of his late boss, beginning with Bush's naval career in World War II.
After becoming the youngest naval aviator, he served in increasingly responsible positions on behalf of his country. Congressman, ambassador to China and to the United Nations, director of the CIA, and vice president. Then, as history will faithfully record, he became one of our nation's finest presidents, and beyond any doubt, our nation's very best one-term president. For millions and millions across the globe, the world became a better place because George Bush occupied the White House for 4 years. He was not considered a skilled speaker, but his deeds were quite eloquent. And he demonstrated their eloquence by carving them into the hard granite of history. They expressed his moral character, and they reflected his decency, his boundless kindness and consideration of others, his determination always to do the right thing, and always to do that to the very best of his ability. They testify to a life nobly lived. He possessed the classic virtues of our civilization and of his faith, the same virtues that express what is really best about this country. These same ideals were known to and they were shared by our founding fathers. George Bush was temperate in thought, in word, and in deed. He considered his choices, and then he chose wisely. The Berlin Wall fell in November 1989, less than 1 year into his presidency. It was a remarkable triumph for American foreign policy. As joyous East and West Germans danced on the remains of that hated wall, George Bush could have joined them, metaphorically, and claimed victory for the West, for America, and frankly, for himself. But he did not. He knew better. He understood that humility toward and not humiliation of a fallen adversary was the very best path to peace and reconciliation.
Former Secretary of State James Baker. Bush's grandson, George P. Bush, also spoke about the late president.
My grandfather was thankful for his country. He was grateful to lead a country where people can go as far and as fast as their dreams can take them, a place where individuals working alone or in groups can help the condition of their fellow man on a voluntary basis, a bright hope for America he evoked so brilliantly when he spoke of 1,000 points of light. He often spoke about the timeless creed of duty, honor, country, the values that have sustained the Republic for its over 240 years. But this wasn't something he just talked about. This is something he lived.
George P. Bush. After Thursday's services, the former president's body will be taken by a specially designed train 120 kilometers north to the city of College Station for burial at his presidential library on the grounds of Texas A&M University. He will be laid to rest alongside his wife of 73 years, Barbara, who died earlier this year, and their daughter, Robin, who succumbed to leukemia in childhood. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Two U.S. military planes collide off the coast of Japan, killing one Marine. Pakistan urges the U.S. to leave Afghanistan as a friend of the region. The United States flies over Ukraine in response to the Russian attack of Ukrainian vessels, and world stocks plunge on concerns over the U.S.-China trade relations. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists have theorized that normal matter, things that can be seen or touched, makes up only 5% of the universe. The remaining 95% is said to be composed of invisible, mysterious, and so far theoretical dark matter and dark energy. While neither have actually been directly observed, scientists say they think the two are what causes the movement of stars and galaxies. Scientists from Oxford University are now proposing a new theory that unites dark matter and dark energy into one single phenomenon. A model developed by the scientists likens this combination to a fluid with negative mass, having a type of negative gravity. In other words, if you were to push something with negative mass, the object would move toward you instead of away from you. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Syrian civilians face enormous challenges amid its war's toll. We'll have a report. China has demanded that Canada free the chief financial officer of the giant Chinese telecom Huawei following her arrest Wednesday as the U.S. seeks to have her extradited for alleged Iran sanctions violations. Foreign Ministry spokesman Gong Shuang said China has expressed its solemn position to Canada and the U.S. regarding this case. It demands immediate clarification of the arrest, her release, and the safeguarding of her legitimate rights and interests. The arrest of Meng Wanzhou, which occurred December 1st and only made public Wednesday, occurs just days after the U.S. and China agreed to a truce in their tariff and counter-tariff trade tensions. U.S. officials consider Huawei, with its massive cell phone and networking equipment presence, a potential national security threat. Australia and New Zealand have barred Huawei from providing next-generation 5G technology. Britain's largest mobile provider, BT, Wednesday said it was removing the company from providing 5G for its wireless networks over espionage concerns. Media reports indicated a U.S. investigation was launched earlier this year into possible sanctions violations. News of the arrest rankled global markets and follows a seven-year ban on the sale of critical U.S. components to Chinese smartphone maker ZTE over sanctions violations linked to Iran and North Korea. An agreement between the U.S. and China averted the company's collapse. Nelson Wiseman is a political scientist at the University of Toronto. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he expects Canada to follow its Western counterparts in keeping Huawei at arm's length.
The bigger debate going on in Canada is whether Canada should join three of the so-called Five Eyes, which are Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, Canada, and the United States, in avoiding using the Chinese tech company in terms of building out this new technology. The Americans have been the most suspicious. And in fact, a letter received from two American senators, Marco Rubio and Mark Warner, of the Intelligence Committee in the U.S., has gained a fair bit of traction in Canada. There's been debate in the intelligence community over this. A current leader in the intelligence community, a civil servant, says, no, we've got good blocks and this isn't a threat. However, recent heads of our security service, known as CSIS, are very much on the side of going along with the Americans. And I think that view is going to prevail. And that seems to be a growing sentiment among the political class. On the other side, some of our leading telecommunications companies are counting on continuing business with this firm. And I should say that this firm has now many contracts and work with Canadian universities. And I think a lot of academics are naive about how invasive this company can be.
China's embassy in Canada said it resolutely opposes the arrest. Is there a concern that this will damage Canadian-Chinese relations?
Canadian-Chinese relations aren't particularly rosy now. About a year ago, there was talk of a free trade agreement between Canada and China, and the Chinese have been pushing very strongly for this. When the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, was over in China, he was prepared to talk about it, but also wanted elements in such an agreement that dealt with environment, labor issues, and gender issues. The Chinese flatly refused and said we shouldn't compromise any trade deals with what they felt were extraneous issues. And that led to a sort of a frosty standoff. The Chinese continue, through op-eds written by their ambassador here and others, to push for a free trade agreement with China. Some elements in Canadian public policy circles suggest, rather than moving toward a free trade agreement, maybe some sectoral agreements could be signed. So that's currently being debated in Canada, but I don't see anything happening for quite a while. Even if you enter into free trade negotiations, they can take often years to iron out. And clearly the Americans would be very skeptical.
Nelson Wiseman of the University of Toronto. Meng, apprehended in Vancouver, faces a bail hearing Friday. In a statement, U.S. Senator Ben Sasse welcomed her arrest, saying, "Sometimes Chinese aggression is explicitly state-sponsored, and sometimes it's laundered through many of Beijing's so-called private sector entities." Pope Francis has expressed serious concern about homosexual behavior among some members of the Catholic clergy, saying this is happening as homosexuality becomes fashionable in society. He said the church must be demanding in choosing its candidates for the priesthood and stressed that the vow of celibacy must be observed. His comments were made in a long interview with a Spanish missionary priest published this week in a book titled The Strength of Vocation, released in several languages. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Pope Francis has made his clearest comments on homosexuality in a new interview, saying there is no place for this type of affection in consecrated life or in the priesthood. In the long interview with the Spanish Claretian father, Fernando Prado, conducted last August, the Pope said homosexuality is a very serious matter and must be discerned adequately with candidates from the beginning. The Roman Catholic Church teaches that homosexual tendency in itself is not sinful, but sex acts between people of the same gender are. The Pope added those who engage in homosexual behavior should not join a life in the church that requires a vow of celibacy to be respected. It is not right, the Pope said, for the holy people of God to live a double life. The new book interview published this week is titled The Strength of Vocation, Consecrated Life Today. In it, the Pope also said, in our societies, it even seems that homosexuality is fashionable, and that mentality in some way also influences the life of the church. Shortly after becoming Pope in 2013, Francis made world headlines aboard a flight back from Brazil when he responded to a reporter's question about homosexuals in the Catholic clergy. Pope Francis said, if someone is gay and is searching for the Lord and has good will, then who am I to judge him? More recently, in a meeting at the Vatican with Juan Carlos Cruz, a gay man from Chile who was a victim of clerical sexual abuse, Pope Francis acknowledged that God had made him this way. Pope Francis has also said that gay children should be treated with understanding. Critics, including within the church, accuse the Pope of creating confusion with remarks they see as contradictory. The August interview is being published as the Holy See continues to battle a storm of criticism over sexual abuse. For years, the Catholic Church has been facing accusations that it has failed to properly deal with sexual abuse, often of boys, by clergymen all over the world. That criticism spiked when the Vatican recently told the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops to delay voting on measures to hold bishops accountable for failing to protect the victims. Pope Francis, who has asked forgiveness for the sins committed by members of the Church, has convened an unprecedented summit of the world's bishops and church leaders at the Vatican from February 21st to 24th to discuss how to move forward on preventing abuse. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
The International Committee of the Red Cross warns it will take Syria and its people decades to recover from more than 7 years of warfare. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from ICRC headquarters in Geneva.
A senior Red Cross official who has just returned from Syria describes the level of destruction in the war-torn country as breathtaking. ICRC Regional Director for the Near and Middle East, Fabrizio Carboni, says he was shocked by the extent of the devastation in the ancient, historic city of Aleppo.
In this city of Aleppo, I've never seen so many people crying. They carry such a weight, a pain, and to many, a sense of lack of hope, which is just breathtaking if you consider the size of the city.
Before the war, Aleppo was the major agricultural center of Syria with a population of around 165,000. Carboni says millions of unexploded ordnance and landmines that have contaminated the country are killing or maiming many innocent civilians. He says the ICRC has the expertise and the orthopedic centers to help the wounded. Carboni says another one of his agency's crucial activities will be to trace the whereabouts of hundreds of thousands of missing people.
It's something which poisons a society, because beyond the pain of not knowing, there are also a lot of consequences. Most of the time, breadwinners are the ones who disappear. So families of missing people are often in a very vulnerable situation.
Carboni says the Red Cross has shared the lists of those who have disappeared or been arrested with Syrian authorities, but he tells VOA no names are provided to the authorities without prior consent from the families of the missing. He notes people on the government side also are victims and have missing relatives. He says learning their fate will provide closure to the bereaved and help them retrieve a semblance of normal life and help move toward peace. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in. Feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The This is International Edition. Pollution in the world's lakes, rivers, and bays is creating conditions in which algae thrive, but other forms of life suffer. Scientists have found they can put those algae to work cleaning up that pollution and can help generate clean power in the process. VOA Steve Barragona visited the Port of Baltimore to see how it works.
Polluted water flows down this shallow channel. It comes out of the Chesapeake Bay here at the Port of Baltimore. But polluted is just how the algae lining the channel like it, says University of Maryland scientist Peter May.
Nature sometimes isn't pretty, but it actually it's always pretty. This is what's doing all the work for us right here. That gives us the production that allows us to remove more nutrients from the water.
Around the world, excess nutrients from farm fertilizers and city wastewater set off massive growth of algae. These giant blooms can often be seen from space. But the algal turf scrubber, as the system is called, harnesses those microbes to do good.
Essentially creating a controlled algal bloom on land, which put the algae to work, pulling nutrients out of the water body.
Durham, North Carolina is planning to help clean up a local reservoir with a scrubber. Others are already running in Florida and elsewhere. The thing about algae, though, is they grow a lot.
What do we do with that algae? You have to have an end use, otherwise you're going to pile that algae up very quickly.
Well, it is high in protein, May says. It's been turned into animal feed. It can be fermented into biofuels, and it makes a great fertilizer. But the University of Maryland's Stephanie Lansing has other plans.
So every week we harvest the algae. With that algae, we actually put it into an anaerobic digestion system.
Inside the digester, microbes break down the algae into methane biogas.
And then the biogas is used to run a fuel cell. The fuel cell is actually a very efficient way of using the energy. You can use it to charge batteries. You can use it for lights. You can use it for fans.
The Port of Baltimore plans a bigger system that could produce a modest amount of renewable electricity, a few hundred kilowatts. That's not bad when you start with just polluted water and algae.
It is beautiful and actually captures people's imagination because you can make that connection that algae is actually doing this work actively for you.
Nature put to work to make clean water and clean power. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Baltimore.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.